Much honourable members, let us welcome one of our candidates who came to come and present himself to this panel. Good evening, sir. We are members of Parliament. We are an ad hoc committee that is looking for the best candidate for an AG's office position. We are embarking into this process, and now we are going to talk to you. But before that, sir, can you please tell us about yourself, who you are, but also tell us why you should be considered for this position. We know your CV, we did receive it, we did read it, but please just take us through why you should be the person to be appointed as an AG. Over to you, sir. Thank you.
Madam Chair, distinguished members of this ad hoc committee, my gratitude personally and the gratitude of my family and my friends, the colleagues that I work with, goes to all of you for the great work that you've been doing. This job that you're doing is very important for South Africa. I hold it highly, and as I sit here, I sit with the utmost respect for each and every one of you. Now, my name is Edmund Shoko Lekulani, and I am here to articulate the message that I have, not only for this ad hoc committee, but also for the people of South Africa with regards to the Audit Office of South Africa. Ladies and gentlemen, every nation has a mission to fulfill. Every nation has a destiny to reach. Now, the mission of South Africa is enshrined in the Constitution of this great republic. And that mission is that South Africa belongs to all who live in it, united in diversity. Now, this mission can only be realized through freedom and democracy, to which transparency and accountability are the chief cornerstones. Now, the Office of the Auditor General of South Africa is the constitutionally appointed watchdog of transparency and accountability in the public financial management system of South Africa. Now, when we're looking at our beautiful nation, today we are faced with a number of challenges. We have five key challenges that we're facing. The first one is high unemployment, followed by high inequality, poor service delivery, an unsustainable public sector wage bill, and most recently, a looming debt crisis. Now, whilst we're still soaking wet and cold in the trenches of warfare against COVID-19, so many allegations of impropriety have been raised to the extent that the confidence of the people in the integrity of COVID-19 related emergency procurement is at an all-time low. Now, these challenges are a threat. They're a threat to our freedom, and they're a threat to our democracy. However, together every South African has a civil duty to overcome these challenges. Now, through its mandate, the Office of the Auditor General has a duty to contribute to the eradication of these challenges by ensuring transparency, accountability, and the use of public funds. Going forward as South Africans, we need to realize and accept that we need change. We need real change. Now, real change does not come from merely entertaining the current status quo. Real change comes from challenging the current status quo, taking and implementing difficult and tough decisions for the benefit of our nation. Now, the independence, impartiality, dignity, and effectiveness of the Auditor General is not something that is built like a house or a car, whereby you nicely build it and put it right there for people to come and admire it. Members, it is something that you build every day on certain basic shared values. Now, I want to share how I am going to strengthen the independence, impartiality, dignity, and effectiveness of the Auditor General in a rapidly changing world. I would like to share my vision. I would also like to share my first 100 days in office if I get the honor to be called the next Auditor General of South Africa.
Chairperson, sorry, on a point of order, I don't want to disturb Mr. Shoko Lekuleni. But I think perhaps we should be asking the questions instead of Mr. Lekuleni giving us his it will emerge when we ask you questions, you know, on what your vision is, etc. I think what the chairperson wanted is for you to just tell us who you are, where you're from, how many children, etc., which area do you reside, in Kabayaku, Kichuwepi, and those kind of things. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Singh. Indeed, sir, if you can, please, the questions that you'll be asking will be able to collect all that you'd want to present. With your respect, can you then please, if there isn't much to say about yourself, can we go straight now to honorable members who will ask questions from you? Are you okay with that, sir?
It is the wish of the committee. Please let us have it that way. I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll now go to Honorable Morolong for Honorable Morolong to please put his question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lekuleni. Look, the Office of the Auditor General is a reputable institution. Its existence spans over a century. And considering the recent amendments in its founding legislation, what do you think should be the critical focal areas for the next decade? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Morolong. Mr. Lekuleni, can you please respond to the question?
Thank you so much, and through you, Madam Chair. Where we've come from as an audit office, as you have said, is very critical, and we've achieved quite a lot. But one thing that we must not do is drop the ball. Something that we've worked for so many years to build can be dropped by just merely one small, tiny speck of failure in ethics and independence. But one key thing that we need to focus on in South Africa, and through this audit office, is that a lot of work has been done by Auditor Kimi Makwetu and those who came before him. And one of the key and fundamental things that they put forth are the changes to the Public Audit Act. When you look at those Public Audit Act changes, they are changes that are actually bolstering the audit office towards a very common shared value. And that common shared value is on consequences. Transparency and accountability without consequences is of no value to the people of South Africa. Now, going forward, it is for us to then take that Audit Act and put it in a position whereby it can be implemented through creating an accountability court. We need a court that is going to be designed to make sure that all the matters that are being raised or that are being pursued using the Public Audit Act are actually going to be executed within a court of law. I thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. On your response, can you please give over to Honorable Peters for her to please pose a question? Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good evening, Mr. Shoko Lekuleni. Mr. Shoko Lekuleni, over and above the scourge of child abuse and the pandemic of gender-based violence, what, in your opinion, is the key challenges facing our country, South Africa, and what role should the Auditor General play in strengthening South Africa's democracy? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, ma'am. Can you please respond, Mr. Lukulele?
Thank you, and through you, Madam Chair. South Africa has five key challenges that it is facing today. And these challenges have resulted in something that is very symptomatic of them, and that thing is called corruption. But the five main key challenges that we are facing are high unemployment. Our people are not getting jobs. The jobs are not there for them. They are now resorting to crime, and some of the crimes now translate to some of the matters that you have mentioned: gender-based violence, child abuse, drug abuse, and so forth. We have high inequality, and that is a gap between the rich and the poor that continues to increase. It continues to increase sometimes at an exponential rate, which makes one wonder whether we are going to be able to bridge the gap or not. But that is not the nature of a South African. A South African never gives up. We have poor service delivery. Every now and then, we hear of a people, not just any people, our people, South Africans, taking it to the street, protesting, saying, wait a minute, we're getting a road deal. What is going on here as far as service delivery is concerned? The public sector wage bill is something that has been discussed over and over again. Finance Minister Tito Mboweni the other day was actually talking about it to say, look, we need to put in measures. Otherwise, we cannot continue like this. And of course, most recently, the looming debt crisis that we are facing. Now, when we look at all these matters, they fall back once again as they are a threat to our democracy. They are a threat to the freedoms of South Africa. Now, the Auditor General of South Africa, as a Chapter 9 institution, is not only placed, but also designed to uphold and ensure that freedom and democracy in South Africa prevails. Hence, it is the duty of the Auditor General of South Africa to look into these matters through the instruments that the office has been given. And we've been given the Public Audit Act. Now, within the Public Audit Act, we are expected and required to do audits. Not just audits, but audits that are relevant to the people of South Africa. It shouldn't be that case whereby the people of South Africa wait once now and then to hear from the Auditor General giving them a report on matters which in some cases are not talking to their public service needs. Now we need to make sure that as the Audit Office of South Africa, we change some of our approaches. We change our approaches in line with international auditing standards. We change our approaches in line with the Public Audit Act. Such approaches will include innovative things such as real-time audits, an audit which is done whilst a transaction is actually happening. And I would like to give an example of such an audit. Recently, we brought in, as a nation, a team of Cuban doctors, highly skilled, and we needed them to help us to fight COVID-19. And this happened all at a big price, some 439 million rand. But however, this happened within a cloud of scandal, according to investigative journalists. Now, this would have been an area whereby the audit office could have actually quickly moved in, just as the deal was being made, before the ink was dry, looked at that matter and concluded that, yes, everything has been done appropriately as far as compliance with the laws and regulations of South Africa are concerned. These are some of the changes that we need to do. And, of course, the work of the Auditor General should not happen in a void. Inclusivity should be the mantra within the Auditor General's office. We want to include our people, the South Africans, in the audit process. We must be able to come up with a mechanism that helps our people to not only know, to not only understand, but actually play a critical role in how we do our audits. And one of the key things that we need to do is to continuously engage them. The people of South Africa should be the eyes and the ears of the Auditor General. Look, we are now in the fourth industrial revolution. We've got so many apps. We've got so much technology, which can be put in the hands of the people of South Africa to communicate and report on areas of service delivery weakness. And that will help the audit office to actually do audits which are relevant to them. That's the only way we can eradicate some of the problems that we are facing in South Africa. I thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. We now give over to Honorable Somio for him to pose his question. Over to you, Honorable Somio.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good evening to Mr. Shoko Lekulini. Well, sir, if you would look into the occurrences in the private sector recently and the actual audit performance, which has gone through a number of huge companies, and the audit which were conducted mainly through the Big Five audit firms, has given into an ire of the fact that the credibility of the audit institutions and the profession itself has been affected. Not only through the reversal of such audits, but such a kind of scrutiny such audit has received, such that the outcomes were never to be credible outcomes. And all that resulted into a loss of credibility in a profession which ought to be profoundly founded on the basis of trust and credibility. You could be fortunate to be appointed as an Auditor General. As a result of such a corporate failure, how would you restore such credibility now in the profession, and to ensure that those auditors that you rely on are the auditors which are going to have that sort of a benefit from the entrenched credibility which is going to be assisted by the Office of the Auditor General? How would you work to ensure that you achieve such restoration in the profession?
Thank you, Honorable Somio. Can you please respond, sir, to the question?
Thank you, Madam Chair, through you. Now, the matter that you raise is a very sad and highly emotive matter for me. Look, all my life, I have been an auditor. That's the skill and the job that I've trained for. That's the skill and the job that has paid my bills. That is the skill and the job that I love doing. Now, when we get to hear of scandals such as the ones that you mentioned, sir, it is a very sore point. But however, it's not one that makes us resign and say, ah, we have been defeated. We have failed. What we did pick up from the scandals that happened is that corruption, when you go for it, when you attack it honestly, corruption fights back. And now it fought back in one of the most profound ways. It actually planted some of its corrupt elements amongst us. The men and the women that we thought are fellow professionals were actually agents of corruption. Now that is unacceptable. But something good did happen after out of that. It made us to wake up and realize that as chartered accountants, as auditors, we are not infallible. That means we need to tighten our controls. We need to tighten our approaches. But now when you want to restore something that has been broken, you cannot do it alone. You have to work with the other stakeholders, the key stakeholders. And one of the key stakeholders in audit is the public and the civil society organizations. We need to make sure that we include them in a manner that they understand the work that we're doing, what we're trying to achieve, and how we're going to achieve it. Communication is going to be very paramount. When the Auditor General of South Africa is coming to do an audit, or is going to do an audit, people need to understand what the intention is and what the true outcome is. But over and above that, outcomes should be tangible. I want to go back to the question of the audit office doing relevant audits. Now, audit, when you look at it in the private sector, and even in the public sector, it can easily be construed as something that is forced upon people. Because you see, you have the Companies Act that says you shall be audited. And you also have the PFMA Act which say you shall be audited. Now, sometimes the clients will say, oh no, you know what? If I could have it my way, I wouldn't be audited. I don't want to go through this. But what we need to do is we need to do work that is so relevant to them so that they realize the value of what we're doing. Now, when the people of South Africa see an audit report which addresses service delivery issues which are right at their doorstep, their confidence is restored in the work that we are doing. And it just doesn't look like just another report that the clever guys from the AGSA have prepared for us. But transparency and accountability without consequences means nothing to the people of South Africa. The audit office needs to work hard to make sure that whenever matters are being picked up, there is a system that makes sure that accountability is netted out. And I want to take you back to that accountability court that I mentioned. One of the key things, if I have the fortune to be called the Auditor General of South Africa, is to spearhead the setting up of this accountability court in the hands, the safe and capable hands of the Department of Justice. But what we want to do is we want to create a creature, or rather a body, that addresses the problems that are specific and peculiar to accountability. And by doing so, that makes the court process fast and results are meted out, and people can see the accountability being meted out. But most importantly, it's a way for us to stop the fraudsters from actually buying time. Because with such a court, we can get an injunction the moment we see that there's a problem here as we apply our Public Audit Act. And that will stop them dead in their tracks from pilfering and continuing to steal from the people of South Africa. I thank you.
Thank you very much, sir, for that response. Can I give it to Honorable de Villiers for him to please pose his question? Over to you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good evening, Mr. Shoko Lukuleni. I hope I pronounced your surname right. Thank you for being here tonight. You've alluded to audit institutions and private institutions that were essentially captured. You said that, you know, it was done by putting individuals there, compromised individuals. So if you were to become the next Auditor General of South Africa, what would you do to safeguard the constitutional independence of that office? What would you do essentially to stop that happening inside the Auditor General?
Thank you, Honorable de Villiers. Over to you, sir. Can you please respond to the question?
Through you, Madam Chair. Honorable de Villiers, you raise a very fundamental issue, which in its very nature is the actual DNA of the existence of an audit office. An audit office that does not have independence is not worth having at all. Yet, Once again, independence is probably one of the most fragile aspects of any audit office. And as such, it needs to be protected. Now, when you're looking at the audit office as a Chapter 9 institution, the Constitution of South Africa is very clear. It says that every other institution in South Africa should protect those institutions. Protect them and make sure that their independence is strengthened. But just because the Constitution has given the audit office a bit of cover, it doesn't mean that the audit office should relax. Now, when you're looking at the fundamentals of independence, they exist in three forms. Firstly, the audit office should have the legal independence. That is to say, when you read the legal statutes, the Public Audit Act, when you read the Constitution of South Africa, there is already in the letter of the law clearly written, clearly spelled out, that this institution should be independent. And that in South Africa is there. So we are sorted. Secondly, there should be operational independence, whereby the institution is not directed by anyone else other than the Auditor General and the tentacles within the Auditor General's office, which he or she has employed to do that. No external force should tell the Auditor General what to do, when to do, how to do it, when to do it, and why they should do it. That is the operational aspect. And lastly, the financial independence. The Auditor General should have sufficient funding to do the job and carry out the mandate as they should. Now, those are the three fundamentals. When I look at the Audit Office of South Africa, I think those three fundamentals are intact. Of course, as a scholar, when I'm looking at the question of financial independence, I am one of those who believes that, no, the Audit Office should actually have a blended approach to financing, in the sense that we just don't want to bill the clients only, but I think there should be room within our system that allows the Auditor General's Office to get a grant. Of course, that is a matter that could be discussed on another forum, but let's go back to the question of independence now, how we're going to address it. So the fundamentals are there. We have legal, financial, and operational independence, but that's not enough. Independence, which is not being used, is also useless. If you have independence as the Auditor General's Office and you're not using it, then really, what's the point? So what we need to do a lot of audits that bring value and pay back that independence back to the people of South Africa. But within it, we realize that the institution is led by human beings. The independence of one human being, or the lack of independence of one human being, could affect the independence of the entire institution. So we need to make sure as the Auditor General's Office that we hire and we encourage professionals that belong to professional bodies. And we have so many of them. Because they belong to a professional body, they are regulated, first of all, by that professional body to behave in an ethical manner. And secondly, we should have an internal code of ethics which addresses the question of independence unequivocally. No one should have a question or should be found not understanding how paramount independence is to the institution. And of course, annually, every member of the institution should actually declare their independence and ethics. That should happen, no questions asked. And of course, at engagement level, when you're now getting into an audit, we still need them to declare that they are independent and they are going to be ethical at the beginning and at the end of the audit itself. And then, of course, whenever the question of independence is breached within the SAI, the Auditor General should not tolerate that. And consequences should be meted out immediately. I thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. We'll now give over to Honorable Singh for him to pose his question. Over to you, Honorable Singh.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good evening again. Now, early on, you mentioned COVID and corruption. Now, the coronavirus has brought with it a plethora of dynamics which the world is grappling with. Not least of all, the fact that we have to procure goods and services which we would not have normally procured. Now, this has provided opportunities for service providers to supply those goods, but it has also led to unscrupulous service providers who are involved in corrupt activities, and these have been, you've seen them in the media. Mm-hmm. Now, the president of the country, when he announced a 500 billion rand package, which included assistance to business, which was a separate 200 billion rand, mm-hmm. called upon the Office of the Auditor General of South Africa to assist in coming up with strategies to monitor this kind of spending, this new spending. And there were some strategies in place. If you are appointed as Auditor General, because COVID is here to stay, or if you were the Auditor General at that time, how would you have responded to the call by the President of South Africa for the Office of the Auditor General to get involved at the inception of procurement processes?
Thank you, Honorable Sir. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, madam. The Public Audit Act is the instrument that clearly instructs the Auditor General on how to respond to matters of state in the public financial management state. Now, when we are looking at COVID, indeed, it was a black swan. It was a black swan event which caught us all unaware. And I would like to direct the honorable members in this committee that when that happened itself, I personally actually did, with the help of my colleagues, a research on the resilience of SAIS during times of disaster. And that research was done throughout sub-Saharan Africa. And we had a number of SAIS, more than 40 SAIS, that responded to that research. And from there we framed and realized the strength and the weaknesses of Supreme Audit institutions when it comes to disaster situations. Now, Honorable Singh, it's very important to know that whenever a disaster strikes, the audit office is not immune to it. It's also affected. We have had friends who have also got COVID-19 at the SAI itself, and of course, we thank heavens they recovered. But when you're looking at it now, you're faced with something that is so deadly, so dangerous, and you're wondering, how do I respond as an institution without putting my people in trouble, health-wise? So what I would have done immediately, as per the lessons that we learned from the research paper that we did, is that the audit office, first of all, really needed to be visible. The moment the audit office is visible, the perpetrators of crime, or those who intend to perpetrate crime, they tend to fall back because they know that the watchdog is there. So what they could have just done, knowing fully well that no one is going or nothing is going to happen to them, they now do it at least with a little bit of fear, because the audit office is clear, it's out there, and it's saying, I'm watching this and I'm responding. Visibility would have been the first thing that was required to be done. And secondly, is the actual act of auditing. We needed to do real-time audits on this procurement as it was happening. Now, the nature of the real-time audit is the one that was very important and very peculiar. We wanted to make sure that we do performance audit. As we do performance audit, we know very well that we're analyzing the economy, the efficiency, and the effectiveness of the procurement that is being pursued. And by doing that, we would have actually identified the situations, or rather would have deterred the situations whereby there was the blowing up of the prices of things, or even the poor procurement whereby we actually buy things that we don't need, but simply because we believe the money is there and therefore we go for it. We would have also pursued compliance audits. Compliance audits that are geared and designed to ensure that whatever procurement is happening, it's in line with the rules and regulations of procurement in South Africa, be it emergency or whatever it is. Those are the audits that we would have done. But what would have been very fundamental about this audit is the fact that we now have Section 5 of the PAA, which requires us to approach an immaterial irregularity, or rather a material irregularity, in a manner that actually constitutes a criminal investigation. We would have actually pursued those who would have been found on the wrong side of the law, and the people of South Africa would have seen that not only do they have an audit office that works, they would have understood that that audit office works for them. I thank you, Honorable.
Thank you very much, sir. I'll now give over to Honorable Wenzel, for Honorable Wenzel to please pose the question.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good evening to you, Mr. Shoko Lekuleni. Sir, you just alluded to the recent amendments to the Public Audit Act, and you mentioned it briefly. If you can firstly explain how you see those amendments, the scope thereof, and secondly, what challenges do you foresee with the implementation of those amendments? And then lastly, how would you, if you were to be successful and be the AG, how will you ensure successful implementation of those new amendments? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Wenzel. Can I give over to Honorable Spitz for her to please pose the question? Say? Oh, the answer. Okay, sorry. Are you ready, sir? Sorry for that.
I am, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Can you please respond then?
Thank you so much for your kindness. I will respond, and thank you also for that question. I love the question that you've raised because it is a moment of pride for South Africa. I have worked through Africa with many Supreme Audit institutions, and as I work through them, I get the opportunity to actually review their audit acts and their mandates. And in all the countries that I've gone through, I've never seen such an empowering audit act as the one that we have in South Africa. And now, with the great work that was done by the Auditor General Kimi Makwetu to ensure that the changes were made to those tweaks, it made it even more fabulous. Now, we have a great tool in our hands. Now, when that tool comes, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not disillusioned by the fact that that tool will come with challenges. Now, the key changes that we have seen in the tool, I've classified them, or rather, I would classify them into three areas. The first one is we've had changes in the definitions. Some definitions have been clarified. The second one is we've had some inclusions on the relationship of the audit office and the externals. And those you can see under consequences, Section 5. And you can also see under the audit fee setting and collection, Section 23. And then lastly, we have the internal matters, changes to some internal matters. There you've got the installation of an audit committee, Section 40, and the remuneration committee, Section 5. But when I look at these changes, the changes that I think are going to be challenging to the institution are the external relation changes. And those are the consequences under Section 5 and the audit fee setting and collection under Section 23. When we're looking at Section 5, this is where the Auditor General has the power now, upon suspicion, to trigger an investigation with the other bodies within our state machinery. The key question that comes out there, or rather the key problem that comes out, is that internally, that is going to affect us as an institution. Because now we are moving from auditors who are used to looking for evidence so that they get reasonable assurance, and now they need to get evidence that not only gives them reasonable assurance, but actually also gives them reasonable doubt that a crime would have been committed. Now that change in mind frame is not going to be easy for the auditors. It affects how you collect your audit evidence. Knowing fully well that in some cases the audit evidence that you are collecting is actually now a crime scene. And now you need to understand, how do you respond to a crime scene without contaminating it? Because the moment you contaminate a crime scene, that could just be it as far as that crime is concerned. Within the institution itself, we know that before, the auditors were already getting threats from the auditees. We have seen situations whereby auditors were kicked out, situations whereby auditors were sent messages to say, we're going to abduct you and so forth. And Auditor General Kimi Makwetu last year also brought that matter to Parliament. That could also create a bit of paranoia with our people. Not to say it's incorrect, but there are situations whereby the auditor themselves will find themselves just being afraid for their lives, for their safety, in situations maybe where it is not necessary to. So those are some of the internal challenges that we're going to face. And externally, the auditees have heard of these changes. And there is a high probability that we're going to have very polarized responses. You could have people who are going to be very excited about this act, and they say, great. And every small thing that they see, they push it to the Auditor General's office, and in the end, the Auditor General's office is inundated with matters that are of no consequence. And secondly, there could be those who are very fearful, and they become very dangerous, because they might decide to take matters in their hands, and they will intimidate and threaten the auditors. Those are the problems that we might face, internally and externally. Now, to sort these out, or rather to react to them, we need inclusivity. The Auditor General's office has a duty to explain what these powers mean. Honorable members, I would like to remind this committee that the Auditor General's duty is to seek for transparency and accountability. If I have the honor to be named the Auditor General of South Africa, I will ensure that I do not turn the Auditor General's office into another crime-fighting unit, because we already have a lot of those in South Africa, and they've got the right mandate and the requisite skills. But we must pursue and use the powers that we've been given within our mandate and ensure that transparency and accountability with consequences is achieved for our people. So we can only do that by bringing our people, the auditees, with us and letting them know what these changes mean to them. It doesn't mean that we're coming to hunt them down like rabid dogs. But of course, if they're caught on the wrong side of the law, the audit office will not hesitate to use the instruments that has been given. Relevance is another way of ensuring that the challenges that we're going to face do not continue dogging the audit office, so to say. We need to work in a way that brings value to our clients so that when we come there, they're not focused on the changes to the Audit Act, but they're rather focused on the good value of work that the Auditor General's office is going to do, not only for the work that they're doing, but also for the society with which they are working for, through good public service delivery. And then, of course, policy and procedure must be there to help our own auditors within the office. We need to train them. How do you react? How do you behave? How do you carry yourself now that you have these powers? Auditors in the audit office are also human beings, eh? And we know that power corrupts. And absolute power absolutely corrupts. As they weigh and move around with this statute of Section 5, auditors should do it in a way that is respectful to the mandate and respectful to the people of South Africa, such that they themselves don't end up abusing it.
That is as far as Section 5 is concerned. Now we have changes to Section 23, that is on the audit setting fee and the collection. Now when I read this statute, honorable members, I feel in a way that this was a very cleverly written statute, because in a way it tries to bring in the National Treasury and makes it the guarantor in situations whereby the auditees cannot pay. But that is not enough. Because the problem that arises is if the money is not there, it's not there. You're not going to get it. So what we need to do is we need to revisit the funding model of the AGSA. Yes, we can be billing our clients as we should, which of course will result in a debtor's book that rises. But we should also consider getting that grant from government, whereby we can follow up and do non-routine audits. Audits that are also going to be beneficial to our people, but solve the problem of hamstringing the audit institution, whereby it cannot do much because it has a huge debtor's book. And mind you, the paying out of debtors is also done by human beings who look at it clearly and say, look, is it worth it? Which debtor should I prioritize? And if they don't believe in the work of the audit office, the Auditor General's office will always be the last one to be paid. They'll pay the consultants, they'll pay everyone else, and the Auditor General is the last one. So we need to do work as an audit office that makes those people proud of the work, and they say, look, whenever I see a debtor's line item with the Auditor General's name in it, I need to pay it fast because I'm really getting value for this money. I thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Now we'll move over to Honorable Spies for her to please pose her question to yourself. So thanks. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, Mr. Shoko Lekuleni. Sir, throughout the day, through the interviewees and the panel members, there was consistently it was stated that the Office of the Auditor General has definitely earned its stripes as being a credible and reputable Chapter 9 institutions, and consistently on other platforms also, as it stands out. We also know that recently, or over the past year or more, that many state-owned enterprises find itself in quite a mess, and over and above the challenges that we are experiencing in the country, this is something that is high on the agenda. With this in mind, there is a position that the Office of the Auditor General should be tasked to take care of, to take charge of all auditing of Schedule II state-owned enterprises. What is your particular view on this? Is this something that you would support or not? And if so, why would you not support it? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Speaker. Can I allow you to say to please respond?
Thank you so much, and of course through you, Madam Chair. The Public Audit Act is very clear that the Auditor General has a duty to audit these institutions. And I would like to believe that every time that we didn't audit them is because we took a strategic decision not to audit them. Now, as an Auditor General, the first thing that you must do is to follow the statute that governs you. And if the statute says you must audit, then you must audit. And as such, I intend to uphold the statute. And the statute says I must audit, therefore I will audit. However, let's think about it practically. What really does hamstring the Auditor General's office from performing some of these audits? The most immediate thing that comes to my mind is the question of capacity. The capacity
the technical capacity to actually do some of these probably very complex audits. So what we need to do as an audit office is to actually capacitate ourselves. Capacitate the audit office in a manner that when it approaches those audits, it approaches them in a way that is valuable to the people of South Africa. Relevance is what we are talking about. We have been trusted with a lot of independence by the people of South Africa, and we really need to use it for them so that they really enjoy it. When you look at state-owned enterprises in South Africa, they've really hit hard our economy. The bailouts, the failure in service delivery. The audit office needs to reinvent the way it approaches these audits. And one of the audits that we need to introduce is focused audits. These institutions are created to achieve a certain agenda for the people of South Africa as far as service delivery is concerned. And that agenda, of course, is to be meted out through a period of time. So what we need to do as the auditor office is to now think to say, the way we are looking at our state-owned enterprises, let us do a focus report on the way they are doing their work, their policies, their current financial status, their vision, and where they are going vis-a-vis the National Development Plan. And when we do that, we create focused audits that then inform not only those who are running the state organs, but also Parliament on the hurdles which we are to see as far as those institutions have to go. I could be wrong, but when I talk to my colleagues, I'm always being told that, you know what, Ed, this issue of Eskom and no electricity, bad thing, yes. But you know, Eskom actually knew 10 years ago that they actually needed to build power plants, otherwise in 2020 we'll be having these power cuts. I'm like, really? I'm like, yeah, but nothing happened. Now imagine if the Auditor General was to do such an audit, such a focused audit, which looks at a state-owned enterprise and gives, or rather indicates, the future hurdles that that enterprise is going to face, give it to this committee of Parliament, and Parliament then talks to those enterprises to implement, or rather be aware of what is coming, we could avoid some of the future problems that are awaiting us. Now, with this focused audit, I do not think of something that is just coming from my mind as an imagination. I'm thinking of things that are being implemented by other Supreme Audit institutions in the world. When I draw inspiration from the UK and the USA National Audit Offices, in the UK, they actually did a focused audit on Brexit to say, if we go through with this Brexit, what are the hurdles that the country is going to face? And they gave it to the parliamentarians to deliberate and prepare the nation for those hurdles. Same thing with the United States. They sat down and they said, look, with all these squabbles that we're having with China, what is the impact on our fiscal regime in the future? And they did that focused audit and gave it to their people to deliberate and come up with means and ways to make sure that when the hurdles comes, they are prepared. And I think South Africa needs to start having such focused audits. I thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Now we'll have to go over to Honorable Mente. For Honorable Mente to please raise the question. We are unable to... Honorable Deputy Chief Whip, she is experiencing load shedding, and as such, she is unable to come in. Now we are going to give over to Honorable Mente for her to ask the question. Honorable Tipuo, you will be coming in and replacing Honorable Dlakute, please.
I thought it's after Honorable Mente, Chairperson. My apologies. Mr. Leshoko Oh, Mr. Shoko Likuleni. Once more, good evening, like I said earlier on. And like you would have heard, I'm standing in for Honorable Tlakude. Mr. Candidate, the auditors are currently experiencing resistance and threats during audit periods to an extent that due to the resistance of such auditees, the Auditor General staged litigation in court. What will you do to mitigate such resistance? And I just want to add further to say to you, how will you ensure the safety and security of auditors? And in particular, in this instance, I would be also raising the safety and security of women auditors, especially in hostile environments by auditees who are not satisfied with previous processes or who feel threatened by a potential outcome of an audit.
Thank you, Honorable Peters. Mr. Shock, can you please respond, sir?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. After almost two decades of auditing, both in the private and public sector, I've actually grown a perception, a knowledge, and acceptance that some of the best auditors that I've ever worked with, some of the best auditors that have ever led me in audit, are female. And as such, to have those people being harassed and not being made available, especially for their skills in an audit, is a travesty. It's unacceptable. It shouldn't happen. And it will not happen any further. But let's look at the status quo of what's happening. When we're looking at the disputes within an audit, one of the finer details about an audit is communication. You talk to your client talks to you. The client listens to you, and you also listen to them. And as the findings are coming out, the findings should never be a secret to a client, to an auditee, because we take the auditee along with us as we do the audit. As we do our audit procedures, we are communicating, saying, look, this is what we are seeing. Can you give us the audit evidence that supports us or that support whatever happened? So by the time you see an audit finding that is pushed to the level of a dispute, either you're bordering along the lines of criminality or the relationship itself has failed and no one wants to listen to the other. I have worked in South Africa with many auditees and many accountants in the public sector, and I have realized that most of them, and a whole lot most of them, are good civil servants who want to do a good job for the people of South Africa. Yes, there is that portion which is terrible, which is bad. They are there, but most of them are actually good people. So I would like to encourage, and I would like to foster a culture of early warning and communication by the audit office with the auditees. No one should be caught by surprise of any finding. Why? Because every finding is going to be discussed stage by stage at every stage of the audit process with every review. And as we bring in senior auditors to look at these findings, they should be communicated well so that there are no flimsy disputes. And in the moment and the matter where we actually get a real dispute, that is when we need to look at ourselves at the audit office and say, okay, what options do we have? Are we now bordering along the lines of criminality because communication has failed? And the moment that is the case, I am very glad that the new Audit Act has given us the powers to respond in it in a remarkable way that will bring about change. But before you pull the trigger on that, Mr. Auditor General or Mrs. Auditor General, let us do audits that are relevant to the people. And when audits are relevant to the people, they will realize what these findings mean and how they affect South Africa negatively. And they will not dispute them if they are a matter of fact. We need to include and be very inclusive in the way that we're working, such that no one really feels left behind and no one feels like they're being attacked. And with such an approach, a consultative, inclusive approach, the consequences that we met out are consequences that are indeed expected to be meted out. Why? Because it will be a matter of fact beyond reasonable doubt that a crime or something very irregular has happened. I thank you, madam.
Thank you very much, sir. Can we now give over to Honorable Mente for her to please pose her question?
Thank you, Chair. Molo Tata.
Molo.
Siyabulela ngokubona.
Bonga mina.
You've just introduced, with your answers, you've just introduced, I think now, if I'm counting correctly, I've counted 4 different audits. And I think those audits will therefore mean a full scope audit of the Auditor General in order to curb the leakages of our fiscals and stop corruption.
Yes.
Now, you mentioned that if we were to follow the bailouts immediately, which will be the real-time audit, if we were to do performance audit, if we were to do a compliance audit, and then this other audit, which is a specialized audit which looks into events, if we had undertaken to produce a report on ESCOM 10 years back through the AG. So I'm looking at all these audits and findings, and I see a full scope that will complement and safeguard our democracy.
Absolutely.
But truth is, that's not happening. Now here you are, you get an opportunity to be the Auditor General. That is not happening. What do you think are the challenges and cause of that not happening, of these other audits you've mentioned, that they are not being undertaken? And how will you address those challenges in order to make sure that all these audits are undertaken and they don't hinder service delivery, and they don't open a leakage in the fiscals, they also stop corruption altogether? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mente. Can you please respond to the questions there?
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. The framework within which the Audit Office works, as a professional audit office, we perform what are called risk-based audits. So what it means is we focus on the risky areas within our country or within a particular entity that we are auditing. Knowing fully well that the resources that we have in our country are limited, they are limited at any time, so we know that as we approach it, we need to prioritize our audits. And the best way of prioritizing our audits is through risk, identifying where the real problems are
and approaching it. Now, when you look at the focused audit, it's not to say that we're going to do a focused audit on every institution. No. We're going to do a focused audit where the risk or where the people's concern sits. And I will give an example. If I am to be appointed the Auditor General of South Africa, oh, what a great honor it will be. One focused audit that I certainly believe the people of South Africa deserve is a focused audit on the impact of the money that we have been borrowing with the international financial institutions. The impact on our sovereignty, the impact on the future of South Africa as a debt-free nation. So that focus report is definitely required. That's a risky area for us. And it's approaching one of the five key problems that we have, and that is a looming debt crisis. So risk-based approach is what we do to make sure that we don't put too much pressure on the fiscus by trying to audit everything, which in itself is practically impossible. And even if it is achieved, I don't think we'll get that much value. So we are going to approach it on a risk-based process. Now, when you're looking at performance audit and compliance audit, these are also subject matter-driven audits. The law can be very broad, and we have so many statutes that we are working with. But we need to realize which aspect of the law is at risk as far as our PFM systems are concerned. And as Honorable Singh has already mentioned earlier, COVID and procurement are a risk area in South Africa. The president doesn't like what has been going on as far as corruption stories are concerned. I don't like what I've been hearing. I believe you don't like it either. And South Africa certainly doesn't like it. And as such, that is one key area that we're going to look at, the procurement laws as far as compliance audit is concerned. So it's not that every law is going to be looked at. No, no, no. Just the procurement laws. There are other laws, labor laws and so forth. Fair enough. But we don't feel maybe there's a risk there. And if there is, of course, it will be pursued. But right now, immediately, as I sit here, procurement is a problem in South Africa as far as COVID-19 is concerned. Now, with such audits, the most important thing is when you have audited, you must report. It's not enough to just audit. And when those reports are done, they must be brought to this august house. And great men and women such as you will deliberate upon them and decide for the people of South Africa what needs to be done. Now, the one thing that I believe we should change is the frequency of which our audit reports are coming out. So let's say I commission that a focus audit is done. The moment it is completed, that audit report should be tabled to Parliament. I must not wait for the consolidation of all the other audits that I've done so that I table everything once in a year. No. I really, really, really want to keep the parliamentarians busy. They look like a bunch that is ready to work very hard and they enjoy doing their work. We are still here in the wee hours of the day, and you're still efficient and as effective as ever. And I really salute you and applaud you for that. So we want to give you more of these reports so that you work harder, you work more, and you deliberate upon them, and the people of South Africa really find the value that they're getting from you as parliamentarians and, of course, their esteemed representatives. So the reporting is going to be more frequent. But basically, my message is, if South Africa is going to move forward from where we are right now, Honorable Member, we need to change. We need to change how we're doing things. Yes, it's fabulous the way we're doing it now, but it's not perfect. There's room for it to change, and we owe it to our people. And that is where my passion lies, the people of South Africa, a very rich nation, very diverse nation, who deserve much, much more. I thank you.
Thank you very, very much, say, and now we're giving chance to Honorable Buthelezi for him to please pose this question.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Let me start by dealing with the leadership qualities. I think there is no doubt about your accounting proficiency. I think the CV speaks for itself. But one of the things which I think is very important is the question of leadership to the institution. Can you share with the committee what you consider to be your strong points or your strongest points as far as leadership is concerned, and also share with us where was this called for, where you had to demonstrate these, what to consider to be your strong leadership qualities. But then let me follow up with this one. The reports of the Auditor General that are tabled in Parliament are the compilation of the reports from the various business units of the Office of the Auditor General. How do you ensure that those reports are credible and reliable and are of a highest standard? Thank you, sir. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Buthelezi. Can I give over to you, Honorable Candidate, to please respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, sir. I'll create a scenario to address the matter of the credibility of audit reports. The audit reports that we do, or rather the work that happens behind them, is something that the people of South Africa rarely see. Because when we employ our methodologies, when we employ our tactics, risk-based approach, and all those wonderful things that we do, we never have the people watching us, and we don't do it in a televised way. It's something that we do as back office, and the people of South Africa, all they see is a report. And that report should evidence the quality and the credibility of everything that has been done. Lo and behold, we keep giving them these reports. Some of them are clean reports. Some of them are qualified reports, and yet service delivery constraints and failures continue. So now the people are questioning, wait a minute, you've done this great report, I don't know how you did it, but you did it and you said this is a clean report, but I still don't have electricity at my house. I still don't have a road to go to. My children came back and they told me that there are no textbooks at the school. So what is the value of this clean report that you give me? Or even this thing that you call this qualified or unqualified, really what does it mean? The credibility of the work of the Auditor General should go beyond a technical report that people can read. It should be seen in the manner with which this report actually addresses the day-to-day matters that our people are facing every day. If our children are not getting textbooks and they see a clean audit report, how can they understand that? How can they say that's credible? So what we need to do as an audit office, we need to bring the people back in and say, what are the service delivery problems that you're facing? We need to create a platform that allows them to communicate with us. The people of South Africa should not only be part of an audit report only at the end. We need to come up with a mechanism that takes them with us. And one of the key things that I mentioned earlier is we want a citizen's app. An app whereby the people can actually send a message to the audit office and say, look, I stay in this district. There's a best water pipe. It's been like this for 2 weeks. We have no water. And as we accumulate that, this is the world of big data now. We need to have analysts who analyze all that data, and then they draw a cross-sectional line, which clearly defines where the problems in service delivery in South Africa are. And from there, we then met out the subject matter audits that are going to address those problems. And indeed, if the people are having a problem with water supply, and we do an audit that literally interrogates, a performance audit, that literally interrogates the economy, effectiveness, and efficiency of how water service delivery is being delivered, they should be able, rather the audit office should be able to pick it up. And we should flag it in an audit report, which the people will actually appreciate. To say, I might not understand the technical part of how they did it, but they really picked up that I have a problem. And now it's been escalated to Parliament. And from then on, we get to fix these things for our people. So credibility is all about addressing the real issues that people are facing. And the more we fix those, the more our audits are going to be seen as valuable and acceptable. Now, why me? Why do I believe that I have the leadership skills that the people of South Africa want? There's something peculiar about leadership. In as much as in some cases it is ubiquitous, it is time-bound. There's a time lock. You can only have a leader for a certain time or a certain period. Now let's look at the period which our people are going through here in South Africa. Let's look at the period which the audit office itself of South Africa is going through. That will determine the kind of a leader that we want. I will effectively say, we need a leader who is decisive, who makes decisions immediately for the people. We need a leader that is inclusive, a leader who goes with the people, who talks to the people, who listens to the people and responds to the people. The people of South Africa, the civil society organizations in South Africa, the auditees themselves, yes, they need to be heard. The Chapter 9 institutions that we work hand in glove with as the Auditor General of South Africa, they need to be included. And lastly, we need a leader who's innovative. A leader who thinks about those focus reports, Madam Mente, that you questioned. A leader who talks about the economy, efficiency and effectiveness through performance audit. A leader who goes back and says, did we comply with the law? And comes up with an innovative audit subject matter that addresses the matters that the people are concerned with as far as compliance is concerned. That's the kind of a leader that we want. But I want to talk about what I have achieved and the exploits that I've made. The Supreme Audit Institution of the future requires a leader who is multi-skilled and knowledgeable. Yes, it is very good for one to be a chartered accountant and have public sector knowledge and so forth. But that is not enough. With the fourth industrial revolution now here, the people of South Africa, they deserve an Auditor General who is an organizational strategist. As a strategist myself, I have spent the last half decade of my life giving strategic advice to auditors generals across Africa and the rest of the world. I have worked in countries, in auditor generals countries such as Rwanda, Kenya, Botswana, Fiji, Nigeria, Mauritius, just to mention a few. And I have worked with those auditor generals strategically, at a strategic level, on how they can bring value and benefits to their citizens through audit capacity building. And with the changes that we've made to the Public Audit Act, the Auditor General is now sort of like a quasi-arbiter in matters of legal jeopardy. Now we need an Auditor General who actually understands the law. And as a master of international law, I have spent countless hours reviewing, writing and commenting on legal opinions within the public financial management space. For South Africa itself to claim its position as a leading democracy globally in matters of transparency and accountability, the people of South Africa deserve an Auditor General who has a lot of international experience and contacts. Having worked and interacted with like-minded international institutions over the course of my career, which has spanned through both private and the public sector, I have been accorded the opportunity to work and share speaking platforms with leaders from institutions such as financial leading institutions as the IMF, the World Bank, and the Global Fund. I have worked with them. I have gained expertise interacting with leaders from international auditing and accounting standard setting bodies, as I sit on those bodies also, deliberating what should the audit standards be saying, responding to the future that the audit world is facing. I have sat in those committees and I still sit in those committees where I give my penny for a thought. And we come up with audit standards that the people, the other auditors and other accountants are actually employing.
If you can sum up, please, Mr. Maluli. If you can, please. We have a threat of load shedding.
Mm-hmm.
My humble apologies, please. We will have lives, but we won't have recordings, which will create problems for us. I'm not rushing you.
Yes, ma'am.
Please forgive me. But if you can, please round up.
Thank you, madam. The people of South Africa deserve an Auditor General who is a skilled negotiator and a diplomat. As the active members of those inter-SAI audit standarding working groups and a capacity builder of 26 Auditor Generals across Africa, I have mastered the art of negotiation and diplomacy for mutual benefit. I thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, sir. Once again, we really want to apologize for really make you to come to the conclusion. And now, honorable members, I guess I'm not going to give anyone now unless there's a pressing question that you think we might not be able to conclude this process if you didn't ask that question. Honorable Morilong?
No, there's one more question, Chair.
Okay.
Yeah. No, thank you very much. More often than not, stakeholder demands and interests clash with values, ethics, and principles of corporate governance and standards.
Mm-hmm.
How have you previously dealt with issues of integrity, issues of ethics, and issues of principles of good governance? But even more importantly, one of the key responsibilities of the Auditor General is stakeholder management.
Mm-hmm.
Now, inevitably, you will engage with stakeholders that are more demanding. How are you going to deal with unreasonable demands from unreasonable stakeholders? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Morolong. Over to you, sir, please.
Thank you, Madam. And thank you, Honorable Morolong. I have dealt with them in a manner that is decisive, inclusive, and innovative. Decisive in the sense that what is wrong, and we will not compromise. Inclusive in the sense that it's not for me to have a strong head whenever someone begs to differ or someone comes with an approach that does not resonate with what I believe in. As an auditor, I have been trained to listen to my auditees, and as such, I have learned the art of listening. Just a few minutes before, I was mentioning that the audit office requires a leader who is a skilled negotiator and a diplomat. And through the works that I have done, I have garnered enough skills to negotiate and be a diplomat in a manner that whenever there's a dispute, I'm able to talk inclusively, bring out the real issues as they are, and come up
with the way forward and the decision. That is how I have dealt with matters. I thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Honorable Mente, you want to come back? Are you fine? Thank you very much. If Honorable Mente is fine with the question, we are concluding the process, Honorable Sir. We want to take this opportunity to thank you for having raised your hand in wanting to serve the nation. Thank you very much.